The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to The Peripheral. First, I want to thank everyone for all the wonderful and kind feedback from the last episode. It was definitely an emotional one for me. I've received so many kind messages and comments. It is a little sad to hear that so many others have gone through a similar situation. On today's episode, my guest is going to talk about what it's like having a family member who is struggling with delusional parasitosis. For those of you that don't know, this is a mental condition where a person feels or sees insects or worms crawling under their skin or on their skin. This can lead to self-mutilation and permanent disfigurement. The intention of this episode is to try to educate and even inquire for help or suggestions from listeners if they've ever had to care for an adult family member suffering with delusions or any kind of extreme mental impairment, and how to lead them to help without overstepping. So, with that, here's tonight's episode. All right, so why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks again, Justin. My name is Carla, and the reason that we are talking today is because I have a loved one, my sibling, who is suffering from a pretty rare delusional disorder, and our family has been struggling trying to figure out a way to help her get the treatment that she needs and the resources that she needs.
Yeah. And I know that there's a lot of people out there that have family members that are struggling with something, and it's really hard to know how to respond and react. So I'm not supposed to ask people how old they are, but how old are you and how long has this been going on for?
Yeah, sure. No problem. I'm 39. My sister is 40. And this has been going on, I mean, at least in a detectable sense for her, for about 5 or 6 years now, with episodes occurring, you know, maybe once a year, but then severe episodes occur maybe once every 2 years.
How was your family dynamic prior to 6-7 years ago? And how did this come on?
That's a great question. So my sister, she's married, and I love my brother-in-law to death. He's incredibly supportive. Mm-hmm. It started with, you know, let me back up. So my parents, you know, and like we all have a close family relationship. Mm-hmm. My parents are divorced, but we all have a good relationship. There are really no like problems within the family. And my brother-in-law and my sister have been married for 6 or 7 years now. And he is definitely bearing the brunt of the stress involved with this situation. So the first episode that I remember happening, like in a severe sense, was in, I think, 2019. And for my sister, it manifested in her believing that she had bugs, flies, worms coming out of her skin, and it turned into her kind of self-mutilating to try to eradicate herself of these, you know, bugs, which she would always try to get somebody to be a visual witness, but, you know, nobody could see them because they don't exist.
And the...
Oh, are you talking about delusional...
Parasitosis.
Yeah, I know.
Delusional parasitosis is what's common, as what that's commonly referred to as.
Right.
Growing up, teenagers, 20s, she didn't exhibit any of this?
No, maybe. I have no idea, you know, like when this started, or maybe there were some ways that it manifested early on, but nothing like was happened within, you know, the last 5 or 6 years.
And so you said 2019, was this prior to the pandemic?
It was, yeah. Actually, it was like the summer before. It's and the first episode that I noticed that was really severe, it lasted for, you know, 6 months or so. It was, yeah, pretty, it was pretty bad and really, you know, stressful for our whole family, you know, especially stressful for my brother-in-law. So
her husband was, I'm assuming everything seemed to be relatively normal. And then this comes out. What was his response?
Well, you know, obviously they're husband and wife, they live together. And so my sister, she starts kind of projecting her delusions onto the people that she's around. And that includes the dog that they have together. Mm-hmm. So my sister would try to convince my brother-in-law that he also had parasites. And then she would take her dog to the vet, telling her vet that the dog had parasites too. And so then my sister uses, you know, she's got like a whole bunch of like home remedies or whatever that she's researched about, you know, sprinkling their whole, you know, home with salt or diffusing tea tree oil over everything. And she thinks, you know, that's going to help. And so that's the home that my brother-in-law is living in currently. That's what's going on right now, actually.
Yeah. And it's home remedies, you know, because they're not going to use chemicals or something that, you know.
Right. And doctors just don't understand. Yeah. My sister, she's, you know, she also, another thing that she does is like doctor shopping, just going from doctor to doctor, just waiting for somebody to validate that, she, you know, she's correct and that she actually does have this parasitic infestation.
So when this first started happening, I'm sure there was a time where you probably took her seriously and probably thought there was something going on. You weren't sure what, but that was, I guess, did it take weeks or was it just a snap overnight? How quickly did it become apparent that this wasn't something actually happening?
Well, you know, whether it's a delusion or not, I mean, it is something happening, you know, for her and her mind, you know, it is happening and it's affecting her physically and mentally. And I think from what I've witnessed, the episodes kind of start with her just becoming a little bit more obsessive over, you know, everything. And then it leads into her, like, you know, staring at her face in the mirror, you know, like with a magnifier. And then she'll do that for a little while. And then after that, then it becomes where she's trying to, you know, get other people involved, asking them if they can see what she sees too. So to answer your question, sometimes, you know, she might do a lot of like those first steps in private. And then, you know, nobody would really know it was going on until she started going into the phase where she's asking people to kind of confirm what she believes is true.
Yeah. And with each of these, I don't know, episodes, have they gotten progressively worse, or are they just, some are more than others? And did the pandemic amplify any of this?
I'm not, you know, that's a great question. So this last episode that's currently going on now has been, it's been bad. I don't know if the pandemic had anything to do with it. I'm sure it did. I mean, it affected everybody's mental health to some extent.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, and just want to make sure to state that my sister has not ever received a formal diagnosis. In 2019, she did have one of the doctors that she went to, a dermatologist, had the wherewithal to prescribe my sister antipsychotics. Mm-hmm. So that got her out of that first major episode. But at this point now, it just takes the right doctor with the right message at the right time to get through to her. And unfortunately, we're not there right now.
And has anyone suggested to her?
Yes. And that's such a slippery slope, because she just, you know, she doesn't want to hear it. She's just like, in her mind, she knows that this is what's wrong with her, and the doctors that she's spoken with just aren't capable of diagnosing it properly. But yes, yeah, and I reached out to an out-of-state psychologist for advice on how to, what should I do? Like, what should my family do to talk to her about this? This upcoming weekend, my dad and I are going to actually, like, we found a local support group for family members of, you know, people going through this type of thing. And we're all just like, we don't know what to do. And that's really the problem, because I think we all know what the problem is, but it's trying to convince, you know, the person, the patient, the family member, the loved one, and delivering the message to them in a way that they will receive it versus being offended by it.
Yeah. And it's because you care. I mean, you're saying that it gets to the point where she self-mutilates.
Yes. Yes.
I'm assuming that's scratching or cutting.
Exactly. Picking and, you know, applying, you know, weird combinations of who knows what to her face and her skin, which probably, it's funny, I was talking to my dad about this yesterday. She's doing so many like weird home remedies to her skin. She's getting like what looks to me like contact dermatitis. And I feel like in some ways she's probably happy that that's happening, because she feels like it validates that she does actually have a skin disorder. But it's not because there are bugs in her skin. It's because she's just, you know, spending, you know, 5 or 6 hours of the day soaking in a bathtub full of, you know, who knows what she bought off Amazon type of things.
Exfoliating and facial scrubs and serums, things that any one of them can irritate the skin, but in excess and in combinations could definitely ruin your skin.
Exactly.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yeah, it's a, I guess I'm just wondering how her husband, I guess, talks to her when she's in one of these episodes, and if he ever calls you or if you ever speak with him about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in some, like, my brother-in-law definitely can, he's like the person that can make my sister the most mad, but he's also the person that can reason with her the most effectively. So she gets upset whenever he tells her a truth, like, you need to speak with a psychiatrist or a mental health professional, and she will get so mad at him. But then he's the only one that can kind of reel her back in. But yes, my brother-in-law is in constant communication with me and my dad and his family, you know, independently. They're supportive of him, and, you know, I try to encourage him to, you know, share this with his family so that he doesn't have to carry the burden alone. But then in some ways he wants to protect my sister's privacy and doesn't want to make her feel embarrassed. So.
Yeah. And I get that. It's a very touch and go situation. And I mean, some siblings are close, but I know that my brother and sister would rarely take my advice, would rarely listen to their little brother because, you know, but people are far more engaged with their significant other, their spouse, and will forgive their spouse way easier than they will forgive a family member.
Yeah. You know, that's really, it's a unique set of like circumstances. My sister and I we're really close in age. You know, we're only 15 mm-hmm. months apart. We've always been close. Like, we live in the same city. We've worked together at times, but you know, when she's going through this, I kind of make a point to not engage in any conversations having to do with her illness. Instead, I will just try to talk with her about, you know, light topics, you know, like reality TV or like, you know, the Murdaugh trial or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're trying to give her a sense of normalcy.
Yeah, exactly.
You're trying to give yourself a sense of normalcy too. During the pandemic, I had a couple
family members that went down the conspiracy theory rabbit holes. Mm-hmm. And sadly, I don't talk to them anymore.
That is sad. Yeah, that is sad. Thankfully, I think my family and I are all in the same boat of pragmatism. Mm-hmm. But yeah, dealing with this stuff with my sister has been tough. And so my mom and my stepdad, they don't live here in the town where we lived. And so my mom, she's like incredibly stressed about this, but she, you know, she's not like boots on the ground. So she gets, my sister might send her a text message of like a news article. And then my mom is like, well, she's okay. She seems fine. But I'm like, well, mom, have you talked to her lately? Like, she's not fine just because she sent you one text message of an article. Like she didn't even say anything. She just forwarded something to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Your mom never reported anything weird prior to this.
Right. So. No. Yeah. There was really, you know, I don't think that there was anything to report. I would say, you know, I've read stuff online and it looks like for women, like the age of 35 is about the right time for this to kind of, you know, make its appearance. And that seems to be the case for my sister. So
that's good to know, because at least my brother, it was right after puberty that his schizophrenia kind of kicked in. Right. Then, and I just assumed that that was true for everyone. Like, I just assumed it was preteen to teens. Yeah. So that's a bit different from, yeah.
Well, it's so complicated. You know, there are so many different ways that it can manifest, and yeah, men and women are different. And I think typically, like with women, you see it if it's schizophrenia, maybe like 30 years old, but then like these delusional disorders might have a little bit more nuance, and they can, you know, they can manifest and show up later, you know, like 35 or so. So
yeah,
it's complicated. The brain is such a mystery.
Yeah. Has it caused arguments between you and her or the family?
I think it's caused tension. You know, sometimes it's my fault because, you know, I'm trying to tell my mom, like, gosh, you need to be more worried about this. But she's, you know, my mom, you know, everybody's got their own stuff. My mom, you know, she recently suffered from a really severe stroke. And so my stepdad is trying to protect her from kind of knowing more about this because he's worried about, you know, her stressing over it too much and that leading to further complications. Yeah. So, yeah, the ways that this kind of like trickles down are just like, I mean, they're almost infinite.
I'm just trying to imagine Christmas or Thanksgiving or the holidays and how that goes if she's in the middle of an episode.
Sure. Well, so one pattern that I've kind of like identified, which is that it's this time every year when it gets bad. And I don't know why. I don't know if it has anything to do with like, you know, winter or the sun cycle or
seasonal anxiety disorder.
Yeah. Who knows? I don't know. But yeah, we live in the South. So, I mean, it might as well be springtime here. So like early springtime is when she typically gets pretty bad. So I don't know. I have no idea if that's related in any way, but it seems to be, fortunately, you know, during the holidays, if she is suffering, she kind of keeps it hidden. But yeah, but really, it's just mostly about like putting tension between the family members, like who's going to do what? Whose responsibility is this? I think we are a close, solid family. So we all kind of understand that we all have our own roles and like we all can help. But we all get frustrated whenever I think we're all just like scared and we don't know what to do. And so it's easy to blame somebody, even though I think we all know that there's nobody to be blamed.
Now that we're way into summer, you might be looking for wholesome, convenient meals to support your sunny, active days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, can help you fuel up fast with flavorful and nutritious ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. Treat yourself to over 34 weekly restaurant-quality options like bruschetta shrimp risotto, green goddess chicken. My personal favorite was the three-bean vegan chili, actually. It was amazing. With Factor, you can rest assured that you're making a sustainable choice. They offset over 100% of their delivery emissions and feature sustainable sourced seafood in their meals. They have all kinds of options from keto to calorie smart, vegan, and protein plus, prepared by chefs and approved by dietitians. Each meal has all the ingredients you need to stay satisfied all day long. This July, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Ready in 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. And they're not kidding. A lot of these things I can just pop in the microwave and they are fantastic. Head to factormeals.com/peripheral50 and use code peripheral50 to get 50% off. That code is peripheral50 at factormeals.com/peripheral50 to get 50% off.
And with a lot of families, it's whoever steps up and whoever kind of takes the lead, and then you have to communicate and ask for help when you are overwhelmed or when you can't step up.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, that's why, you know, I know my dad and I, we are staying in constant contact with, you know, my brother-in-law, just to let him know, like, we support you if you feel like it's time to, like, because we've looked into several options. In the state where we live, you know, there's no like Baker Act or whatever. So you can either go to in front of a judge and, you know, plead your case and ask for a warrant to have her, you know, like involuntarily detained.
Yeah.
Or you can call the police and tell the responders, you know, the situation. And then you kind of just have to cross your fingers and hope that whenever they come and evaluate her, that they'll see kind of the things that you're worried about. And then they can also do like an emergency detainment or something like that.
Yeah, it could be a psychiatric evaluation.
Yeah.
Also, you could try to do power of attorney, but she probably wouldn't allow that.
Yeah.
And sadly, the things you said are options, but for what she's suffering from, I'm not sure. I mean, if somebody's ranting and raving, or if somebody is threatening self-harm, yes.
Yeah.
But if they're just delusional, I'm not sure how that's going to go if the police are called or if anyone's called. Not to dissuade anyone from doing that.
No, yeah, you know. I know. Well, yeah, and Justin, to your point, so the psychologist that I spoke with, she said that should be a last resort. Yeah. I think the point of doing something like that would be maybe you get like a caseworker involved that could kind of keep her accountable to like going through like the steps for continuing her therapy and staying on her medication. Because at this point, you know, at some point the delusion will break. I don't know if it's going to happen naturally or maybe she'll like happen to take some of her medicine, but it will come back. Mm-hmm. And having her held to some accountability might limit further destruction, you know, to her life. You know, she's loved and she has, you know, she actually owns her own business. And at this point it kind of operates on its own. Mm-hmm. But say, for example, she had to go to work. She can't work like this, you know?
Yeah.
So she needs somebody to like, or she needs some system to help her.
Yeah. And it sounds like she is very high functioning. So again, that
most of the time.
Yeah. And I'm not a professional, but I've done things in the past with some of my friends or a family member where when everything was good, I had them write themselves a letter to them, just saying, this is to Megan, and hey, Megan, you're doing great today, and blah, 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 and literally spell out like these problems that you have are not real, or you can overcome them, whatever it is. Even have a video of it as a reminder, but even then, it's not... that's not a solution. That's not that. That was just something I had come up with on my own.
A good idea.
Because I didn't know what else to do. And I think it's good for people to even do that for themselves. If, you know, when you're in a good place, write yourself a note. So then when you're in a bad place, you can remind yourself, hey, you're a good person and this problem shouldn't affect you. But,
yeah, I like that. That is a good idea. I know. So I know that my sister knows that there is something wrong. And she's like in the throes of like her delusion right now. So she, I don't think she's capable of acknowledging it at the moment, but mm-hmm. when it's kind of, you know, like on the fringes or whatever, she can say, like, she knows that there's something wrong. And she'll even say, okay, I'm going to go to this doctor. And if they tell me there's nothing there, then I'm going to go see a psychiatrist or whatever. Yeah. But then that's at that point, it's almost too late. And once, maybe it's like in some ways like a defense mechanism, she's just so convinced that something is wrong that is physical and it's not mental. And she will like go to the end of the earth trying to find somebody that's going to reaffirm her belief.
Yeah.
So I think like the solution would be finding a way to stop her while she's on the cusp, but it's going to be a long journey. You know, there's no simple solution to this, unfortunately.
It's frustrating because I've watched doctors and psychiatrists and everybody misdiagnose people.
Totally. Yeah. My sister went to the emergency room. Yeah. The doctor wrote her a script for doxy and advised her to go see a dermatologist.
Yeah.
Even though she was displaying obvious symptoms of like, you know, these delusions, yeah. It's just, yeah, it's disappointing.
And it can be dangerous because if she actually yes. does have an issue, it might be masked or it might right. not be taken seriously because of this other problem. No.
Yes. And a lot of times while she's going through this, she's almost manic and her behavior is erratic. She's taking risks that she wouldn't normally take. And then also, you know, there is like a heightened risk of like suicide for people that are going through this. So there are a ton of reasons why this is concerning versus just, you know, what she's doing, picking at her skin. Mm-hmm. So
back to a point you were making earlier, if she's saying, okay, I'm going to go see this doctor. And if they say there's nothing there, then I'm going to go see a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to catch her in yeah. a sober, you know, coherent moment. And I use sober just meaning, you know,
right. yeah,
stable. yeah. And try to persuade her, them, whoever, to go do these things when you have that moment, when you have that moment of clarity.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest part.
Yeah. Because you believe that that moment of clarity is going to persist, but then the next day it's too late. Yeah.
I understand your dad trying to protect your mom. I understand her husband trying to take the helm and even shield you guys from a lot of the burden because he's the husband. He feels the responsibility there.
Well, I mean, ultimately he's the next of kin. So any major calls would have to come from him. I mean, we yeah. think.
Yeah. And at least it sounds like you're on the same page.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
I've been involved in a couple interventions myself and, they never went well.
Have you ever done an intervention with somebody who has the belief that they've got bugs living in their skin?
No, not that. I've done interventions for drug abuse and interventions for parents who would enable their child.
Wow. I've never heard of an intervention like that before, but wow.
It never went well.
Yeah.
It never had the desired outcome that we all thought it would yeah. have. So on one side, I think, how do you get through and let somebody know that this is serious and needs to be addressed without hurting their feelings, without causing them undue harm? And it's an impossible task, I think.
It's, you know, I think that perhaps with just, you know, a few core members of the family, you know, like I think I mentioned that I spoke with that psychologist who has a little bit of specialization with these delusional disorders. Her suggestion was she said, never trick the person, never try to like give them medication in their food or whatever that they don't know they're taking, never try to take them somewhere without explaining to them what you're doing. And she said to tell the person, you know, your loved one, your sister, your family member, we're concerned about you and this is why. And we don't know if this is going to address your your physical problem, but why don't we go together to speak with somebody that can at least help you with the associated anxiety kind of thing? So I think, I mean, it all sounds great, but it's not easy to do in reality.
That's a baby step towards the real problem. And each baby step is, it can be trench warfare and you're fighting every foot for ground.
No kidding. Yeah. Because then the doctor said after that, my sister will need a full like psychological evaluation and then possibly like have a visit with the neurologist to do a brain scan. So yeah, I mean, if we can, I am optimistic that she might be receptive to your original point, like a small, not a full intervention, like nobody that would make her feel embarrassed, but people that already know like what she's going through, like her husband, me, my dad, just a small group of, you know, her core kind of like internal circle. If we can just approach her and let her know that we love her and we're concerned and we just want to help.
Yeah.
So maybe that will help, but you know. And, it's going to be a long journey for sure.
Yeah. And I think that advice of don't ever trick them is really key. And you know, you don't have to trick anyone. You can tell them exactly what's going on and usually can get people to be agreeable. As far as an intervention goes, it doesn't have to be a formal intervention. It can be we're just talking to you and it's touch and go, see how the initial conversations goes and how receptive she is.
Yeah.
When you make things very formal, like we're going to be here and talk about this, it's the pressure's on and people shut down.
Right. Especially if it's like, hey, here's your friend from high school and here's somebody you haven't talked to in 6 months. Like that could be embarrassing. And if I were in my sister's shoes, even if I were having a day of clarity, imagining myself going to the doctor and telling my doctor, hey, sometimes I believe I have got worms living in my skin, I would not ever want to have that conversation. And I'm sure that that's just one conversation, but then accepting all the things that come along with it, like you obviously have some kind of mental disorder. I'm not saying it should be, but it is embarrassing and it's shameful. And so I can understand why she might want to delay having to come to terms with it.
Yeah. It's been going on for 4 years now. I hope that she doesn't do permanent damage to herself because, I mean, it's one thing to believe something. It's another thing to act upon it. And she's obviously acting upon it. And that's a rough one. Because I've talked to a lot of people about cutting. I've talked to a lot of people about other self-mutilation acts. Those things usually are not based in delusion. They're based in other forms.
Yeah, like releasing something. I know. It's a doozy, man. I never thought that this would, you know, be happening in our family, but it is. And so we're going to do our best to take care of our loved one. So, and it is something that is manageable. It just, takes the right set of circumstances to get her to accept the help that she needs. So,
in the moment where she will be agreeable and willing to do it.
Right. But then even after that, I mean, it's going to be like forever. Like she's going to have to be committed to this forever. And there are some times where she feels fine and then she might not take, I'm not a doctor at all. So just hypothetically say she was supposed to take a certain kind of medication and then one day she would feel fine. So she might not take it. Then we could be going down this whole road again and again. So it's going to take a lot of accountability and a lot of dedication for everybody, family at least to keep on top of her.
I take a Ritalin prescription and I forget to take it in the morning. And then halfway through my day, I'm just wandering around doing nothing for hours. And then I'm like, oh, I forgot.
Oh, I need
to take this. And that's the thing is I've tried Adderall, I've tried Vyvanse, and they're so powerful that if I take them, they put me back into bed.
Oh, wow.
So I'm on a very low dose of Ritalin because they actually knock me out. I know amphetamines put me down.
Well, but it's the brain is such a mysterious organ, isn't it?
Yeah. 10 to 15 milligrams a day. And I take it in 5 milligram increments. It's a game changer for
yeah.
me.
Well, I'm glad that you found like whatever's working. So it takes a long time, and it takes like now even more than previously. Like you have to have like a really good relationship with your doctor or psychiatrist, because they're monitored so heavily now. So
it took me 2 or 3 psychiatrists, and over the course of 2 years.
Yeah.
During that time, I pretty much self-diagnosed and figured out I have terrible ADHD that has reared its ugly head now, and that I probably had it all my life, but I was managing it. But I swear, like one doctor, one psychiatrist was saying, oh, you have depression and you have anxiety.
Yeah.
And
like, wow, doesn't that make your job easy to just throw out the two most common things, like the umbrellas?
And so the funny thing was, I was trying to install this smart door lock on my front door, you know, one of the key button things. And I got really frustrated while I was trying to install this lock. And I got pissed because ADHD, emotional dereregulation. I threw the lock across the room. I left it off my door all night long and slept like a baby. Doesn't sound like I have anxiety, does it?
No. It is like such a, whenever like a doctor says to you something where you feel like they finally get it, isn't that the best feeling? Where I was telling my doctor something about how, like, whenever I got in college, like, I just didn't really like going to class, and suddenly, like, it, you know, it's just like not interesting to me anymore. And she's like, well, maybe that's because you had ADHD. And I was like, yes, maybe it is. Thank you. Nobody's ever said that to me before, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. The one thing about ADHD that finally made me realize I had it, it wasn't the inattentiveness. It wasn't the, what I call the spiraling, where I'm just kind of doing nothing, walking into a room to wash my hands, realizing there's no soap, and then going to get soap, realizing I don't need soap. So I need to go to the store. But before I go to the store, it's like not that.
Then forgetting that you ever were washing your hands in the first place. Yeah.
It was the rejection sensitivity dysphoria.
Interesting. Tell me more about that.
So rejection sensitivity dysphoria is when you get a criticism, or when somebody says something to you, you completely and utterly can misconstrue it, amplify it, react to it in a very just extreme manner. And of course, the emotional deregulation goes hand in hand with that, because somebody says something to you regardless of, I think I'm good enough that I can take tone. I know when someone's trying to be nice or be mean, you know, intentionally, but it's just, you're always feeling guilty or beating yourself up or taking everything to heart that you shouldn't be.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Yesterday, so I was on a Zoom meeting with my boss and this prospective client, and I said something that immediately my boss like messaged me. He was like, don't ever say that. I mean, blew for the rest of the day. And even now I'm like trying to keep it out of my mind, because, you know, it was a mistake, but it wasn't anything that like killed the conversation. Like nobody's going to like suffer from like this little comment that I made, but it was,
But now you're ruminating on your boss telling
and
you.
And like 10, 15 years from now, I will wake up in the middle of the night and think about this time that I did that. And
that's rejection sensitivity dysphoria. No, I mean, and it comes in all forms, you know, and the Ritalin helps the most with that, and my emotional deregulation. It doesn't actually help really at all with my focus or my attentiveness. People usually take Prozac or take a mood stabilizer, whereas I take Ritalin, which has the effect of a mood stabilizer for me. And then when you come into the realm of schizophrenia or delusion, you know, it's you have different things. I mean, typically when it gets so bad, lithium is usually the end all be all, but Seroquel can snap somebody out of it and, you know, kind of put them to sleep for a day usually.
Yeah, there's like a, I think there's even like an injectable drug. I can't remember what it's called. I have a friend who's a doctor and, mm-hmm. you know, it's a powerful antipsychotic that would take her out of the delusion, but then it's not like a long-term solution. It's just something to break the current psychosis type of situation.
So, very temporary. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not addressing like the core issue. So the psychologist that I talked to about my sister, she said she was wondering, you know, if there was any kind of trauma, like, and she's the one that also said that maybe my sister should see a neurologist to do a brain scan, because there are so like many things that could be causing this disorder and nobody knows what it is. It's possible that we might not ever know, but by doing, you know, some research, it's possible that we might know a little bit more, that my sister might know a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, a brain injury, if she hit her head or.
Yeah. I mean,
if you Google anything, it's always cancer, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think she has cancer, but I mean, hopefully not. Or if she does have cancer, hopefully it's curable. And then maybe, you know, her life will be better once she gets rid of it. I don't really know what the answer is. I mean, I don't know what's better or worse. Like if it was cancer and it was curable and once it got addressed, then she could go on to live, you know, like a normal and healthy life. That'd be great. But
yeah, I guess if anyone's listening and they've been through this or are going through this, I would love to hear if they have any suggestions, if they have any things that worked for them, although every situation is very different, I know.
I would love to hear that too. It's a unique situation. And if anybody has any advice, or even if they just want to, you know, share their story, I would love to hear it. It's hard because, even just to describe it, it's difficult. I had to tell my boss because I had to, you know, leave work for a few days, and I had to tell him kind of what was going on and just describing to him, you know, the situation. It was, you know, I mean, it is weird and it's okay for it to be weird, but he was understanding and everybody is supportive. But it's rare, but it's also common at the same time, I guess.
It's weird in the way of, you know, this is why we talk about it, is to try to make it a little less weird. So when somebody is struggling, we can get help. That's the whole point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I really appreciate you having this platform for us to discuss our weirdnesses together.
But before I hit stop, was there anything else you wanted to get across before I stopped the recording?
Really, like, the point is, I guess for me, like, I've enjoyed talking to you and I hope that this is beneficial for other people.
Thank you, Carla, for sharing. If anyone wants to write in, tell me about their situation or possibly what they could do to help a family member, please write to theperiferalpodcast@gmail.com or find me out on social media. Thank you.